Ground is produced by the Global NGO Executive Committee, a storied nonprofit that has for 60 years partnered with the United Nations to guarantee a voice at the decision-making table for civil society leaders. GNEC offers services to more than 1,600 UN-vetted global NGOs, which are on the front lines of tackling the most pressing issues of our time. I'm Adrienne Berg, a member of the NGO Committee on Aging New York and the host of On the Ground. I am so happy to be here with you because we have two really inspiring guests. In my opinion, this particular interview is the hardest one to do because there are so many things to cover that I think would be useful to you, listeners. Because I know when we talk about the arts sometimes, we talk only about survival mode. But who has survived? How did they do it? What is their mission? What is the fun that they've gotten through these journeys, through their own lives, through their own efforts? These are the kinds of things that inspire you to keep going. And that's what we'll see today. We have with us Joanna Sherman. She's the co-founder and artistic director of Bond Street Theater. Now, among other co-founders was Patrick Sharada. And you know, with regard to GNEC, he is always in our memory. He is the president superstar that started so many of the things we're doing, including this podcast. We also have with us managing director of Bond Street Theater. We also have with us Michael McGuigan. He's the managing director of Bond Street Theater. And he's also a performer. He's going to tell us a little bit about that and what it means to be so peripatetic, because both of these superstars in mission-driven arts have been all over the world. So let's start with Joanna. Joanna, Bond Street Theater, tell us a little bit about its mission, and then we'll talk about its original origin with Patrick and yourself.
Yeah, sure. Thank you very much. Bond Street Theater was formed in about 1977, so we go back a long ways. Our mission is to use theater as a voice for justice, and we've done this in more than 60 countries around the world. We reach people in refugee camps, schools, shelters, prisons. We work in rural villages, urban centers, and we partner with organizations in each place that we go. And I think this is very important. Sometimes we're partnering with arts groups, but really mostly we're working with grassroots organizations, and we are inspiring them to use theater in their work as a way to bring information to people. Theater is a very attractive and effective way to bring information to people, much better than posters and flyers. It's active, engaging, entertaining, and ever so useful.
In other words, you're not simply entertaining the kids. You know, there are wonderful volunteers that go to refugee camps, yeah, and they clown, they do things like that with children and the adults. Is every one of your performances message-driven and information-driven?
Yes. We're working with groups and helping the people, the participants in the group, speak out and articulate their issues and then make that into a performance. This is our superpower. The way that we work is to let people speak out about what's important to them, package it into a show, and then bring that to the community. So in our long past, we've done many performances, but now we're really focusing on other people speak about, work on issues that they decide. So our job is to help them speak out about what's important to them. We gather the stories, and then we shape these stories into a play. So we're working with non-actors.
You're working with advocates is what you're doing.
Theater is not rocket science. Really, we're all actors, right? And
for
storytelling,
sure,
is intrinsic to human nature. We're all storytellers. So this is really a very natural human way to work, really, just helping people tell their stories.
So let me throw this over to Michael, because little by little, your backgrounds are going to come out. I have to say that Joanna is not only the founder or one of the co-founders, but she's directed and taught internationally. She's been part of arts building and peace building at the United Nations, the National Council on Women, Association of Performing Arts Presenters, the UN Conference on Women in China. And really, it goes on and on. And she has been honored by NYU, so on. So you're going to see, because I think it's important for you to see how just a couple of people can make so much of a difference all over the world. And on agelesstraveler.com, I'm going to do something I have not done in 7 years of broadcasting. And that is, I'm actually going to publish an entire resume of both Joanna's and Michael's. I think it's really inspirational in and of itself, not just something that your mother wrote to make you look good. So I really like these, what you've done in the world. But let's
start. Thank you so much.
Yeah, Joanna, before we go to Michael, so how did it all start? Just give us the origin story here.
Okay, this is a long history, but I'm going to try to make it really short.
Okay.
But way back when, I met Patrick Sharada, and we were working with this group at St. John's University, a student group. And that student group grew into a kind of a quasi-professional group, and we decided that theater would be a great way to speak out about what was going on in New York City. So it was very local. Our early shows were very local, and we took this idea that we'd be able to combine the very entertaining features of Commedia dell'arte with all of our massive theater training and create shows that were kind of socio-political and talked about the issues in New York City. Well, that's preaching to the choir. So as we start to work more nationally, we were working with people that didn't necessarily agree with us. So that expanded our horizons of how we could address issues. And as we start to work internationally, we saw that the number of issues and the situations and the environment in which we were working really called for a completely different approach. And over the years, we adjusted our approach to be the most, the most useful to the environments in which we are working, those particular grassroots areas. And we began to work more with the U.S. Embassy. And we asked specifically to work in those outreach areas that other people were not working, not just to go to the big theater festivals, but could we work with the street children? Could we go into the village that doesn't ever get theater? And so on. So this is kind of a brief way we came from being very local, comedic, into the big wide world.
So, you know, Michael, we're going to turn to you for a moment and take a little bit of a break. But when we come back, I want to ask you that very question. You are not just the managing director, but you're an ensemble member.
Yeah, yes, indeed.
So what Joanna has just mentioned is very international. And I see that you've had projects in Afghanistan, Myanmar, India, and Turkey. When we come back, I'm going to ask you this question. What's it like being in front of such an international audience? If they are children, if they are women, if they're tribal, if they're rural, it's a little bit different than being on Broadway or off-Broadway. What does it mean to you to be in front of those folks, and how do you have them receive you? We'll be back in just a moment. Are you interested in high-quality online STG education programs at no cost and with a flexible schedule? Through the Global NGO Education Committee, GNEC, and Rutgers Preparatory School, the Innovation Academy is offering a variety of programs that address both local and global challenges that should be of interest to you. It provides NGO a virtual platform for online courses and programs from top schools and other organizations designed for every grade level from world-class educators. Take advantage of this amazing opportunity to expand your knowledge, be connected, be inspired by NGO leaders and educators. You will get all the information you need at the Innovation Academy at GNEC, GNEC.NGO. And now we are back. And as promised, as somebody who is not only an advocate of theater, but I'm theater ecstatic. I see theater almost every day of my life. I know that does not sound possible, but I find it. And I see all kinds of audiences. And I see difficulties sometimes of very well-trained actors in front of folks who are not theatergoers in general. What does it mean to you?
Oh, yeah. It's interesting. You mentioned just before the break all the different kinds of audiences. But it's strange because for me, they're not refugees or people who've experienced a certain trauma or children or adults. They're just people. They're just the audience. And certainly the one thing an actor craves is to be in front of people and hope to give them some kind of inspiration or a message of hope and all of that. And as I also mentioned before the break, I've been with Bond Street Theater since 1979. And it's like, this is the only work I kind of know. I did do a Broadway play at once where I used my skills as a stilt dancer. And that was, you know, very interesting. And I got to see a little bit of the commercial side of theater, but it was readily available to me that it's such a rarefied form of theater, you know, very useful. It's got its place certainly in the canon of American theater, but I really wanted to have very unusual experiences. And certainly with Bond Street Theater, we got to do that.
You sure did. I'm going to ask you a little bit of a deeper question in a minute, but I do want to know, what is the Shinbone Alley Stilt Band? It's on both of your resumes.
Yeah, so while a lot of the stuff that brings us into UN universe is very serious work dealing with, you know, rape crisis, trust or whatever, I do have to say that a lot of our work is based in joy. It's based in understanding what other artists who are performing artists can do, whether they're musicians or dancers. And in our early years, when we were doing, you know, street theater, radical street theater, anti-nuclear war, that type of thing, we always had a band on the side. They were musical presentations that had songs written for the show and the band. And some of our performers learned how to walk on stilts. And they also learned, oh, I used to play an instrument in high school. And they get the real band members to either, you know, up our game in the music, or we taught those musicians how to walk on stilts. And suddenly it started very small like that, little parades before the show with our music and our stilts. And then it just became the Shinbone Alley Stilt Band. I'm the drummer. Joanna plays a tenor saxophone. And we just have these amazing musicians who are professional musicians who also have a spirit of fun to get in front of an audience. And that's very much informed our work, though, because I think one of the things we do when we are working with a group of refugee people or non-actors who are trying to do a message about, where to go for rape counseling or something, we always start with the craziest, funnest sort of exercises that make people go, I don't know what we're doing, but this is fun. I'm going to stay here.
I'm not going to get out of my seat. Yeah, I'm not leaving. Yeah. Yeah, well, you know, there's such a dichotomy in this resume. So we talked about the stilts, Odin Teatrets, Stilt Congress in Denmark. You've participated in that. You've participated on Broadway productions of teaching stilt work for The King and I. I mean, this is that part of your life. But I said I would ask a deeper question, and this is it. But again, looking at the resume, you've been involved with Youth for Peace and Justice tour in Montreal, Belfast Community Circus, Northern Ireland. And we know that these areas have been troubled one way or another, Pakistan, Jerusalem Festival, and so on. Of everything you've done, what do you think was the most resultful that you would look back and say, this made a difference? It could be one or two that really are, let's say, your legacy.
Boy, that's an interesting question because so many of them have been very successful in different ways. I think our long-term work in Afghanistan was so important and really did reach quite a lot of youth thanks to the U.S. Embassy and the United States Institute for Peace. And I think a lot of people don't know we have an Institute for Peace. It's not as budgeted as the Institute for War, but they definitely exist. And they created projects where we were working with youth in 25 provinces. And this was a project to have them decide what do they want to bring to their community. Do they want a project that helps, you know, clean up the streets, you know, get rid of the refuse, or give the women exercises, you know, a gym type member? Is it, you know, getting to know their own community leaders? And it was a fantastic project, very successful in so many ways. We still keep in touch with some of these people, though, unfortunately, for powers beyond our control, yes, you know, the Taliban came back and, sure, and so much of that is closed up. Yes. And many of the people we worked with have now dispersed to other countries, many here in the United States.
I want to ask Joanna that question. The most inspirational, let's say, long-lasting, perhaps, what you think has been the most successful single project?
There really is no one single project. You know, I mentioned a few that are standout. You know, going back to Afghanistan, we created four all-women's theater groups, and they could perform solely for women. And people told me that it could not be done. And when someone tells me something can't be done, immediately I want to do it. And we succeeded. And these girls had no training. Maybe them never even saw theater or saw television. But we made them into theater groups, and they got very good. They became very good actors, and they reached women, and they brought them information about the right to vote and the right to go to school, et cetera. Besides Afghanistan, we worked for a long time in Myanmar, and that was a very interesting place to work in the jungle areas with people that are, this was after Hurricane Nargis. There were a lot of orphaned children who were just left to the monasteries to take care of. We brought them just a little joy and fun. So there's just, you know, working in with the Rohingya refugees in Malaysia, that was also very interesting and very rewarding. We just did a project in Thailand working just with psychologists, counselors, social workers who work with trafficked boys and girls. So in that case, we were training trainers, very effective. Train trainers to continue the work well beyond where the audiences that we can reach.
Yeah, so let's go back to Michael on that before we take a break. You come in, you create, I'll call it art, performance art. You are very clear that you with us that you engage the community. They are really creating the basis, and then you take it from there. But then you leave. And you both mentioned the Taliban erases some of your wonderful work. Some of it is just of the moment because there's a crisis. What does that do to you in terms of continuing you to inspire, to be inspired and do the next project? And what is the next
project? Yeah, we're always inspired by the last project. And I think it's possibly because, you know, we're not always going in to see what we want to say or what we want to do. It's like we're going in with a very open mind and experience to go, hey, what do you want to do? We're just going to help you try to stage it in a way that we think will be clever and interesting for the audiences that are going to watch you. And all along the way, we're learning so much about, you know, how intelligent and how clever and smart and, you know, artistic everybody is. We're always learning something new, and that's the inspiration. So even when situations like what happened in Afghanistan and, of course, in Myanmar, there's the military dictatorship has kind of come back again. We're just, you know, yes, these are all setbacks, but I get so inspired that I'm just going to dive right into the next thing. And we have a number of, I guess Joanna can tell you, we have a number of proposals out there for doing more of this work. I'll say just from my own personal observation, we're in an election year, so I don't know how quickly those proposals get approved until, you know, everybody knows who's next in the White House and that type of thing. But in at the same time, we're re-engaging in our own domestic programming. We've done so much performing overseas, and then, of course, COVID knocked everything out for a couple of years. We're starting to make more alliances and partnerships with groups that we know here in New York City.
You never give up. And that is also, by the way, for me, Patrick had such a spirit of also never giving up, you know. So let's go over to Joanna before we take our break. I'm going to set up the question and then we'll answer it afterwards. This is not cheap. You have to go overseas. You have to work with so many people. You have to have lodgings, on and on and on. I'm sure you know your budgets. Most of the people listening now, their biggest problem is, we just heard from Michael about some proposals out. And the issues of who's going to win the election might actually have a huge impact on Bond Street, probably always. Every election probably has. So we're going to talk a little bit about survival, how you make it happen. Because whenever I talk to anyone in the arts, there's only one issue. There's not enough money for the arts. And those NGOs listening, no matter what their advocacy mission is, there's not enough money for them. And they want to know, how do you keep going? Don't you go anywhere. If you're interested in civil society and NGOs, please subscribe free to the NGO Reporter. We're gathering perspectives from the global NGO community worldwide and celebrating 30 years of connecting NGOs, the media, and civil society networks worldwide to the work of GNIC, its constituents, the NGOs, and the topical issues related to all the UN SDGs. So how do you get your free copy? Well, simply go to gnic.ngo. And you know, you can also submit articles for the reporter. And if you do, you will be read by UN media and those interested in civil society, other NGOs. It's certainly worth doing. So please contact our editors and our staff at GNIC, GNEC.NGO. We are back now with Joanna Sherman. We're talking about Bond Street Theater. We're talking about performances all over the world. And we're asking you, Joanna, how do you do it?
Well, we have a long history. So we've been through many hurdles and ups and downs, as everybody probably out there listening has. And I think artists are dauntless. We don't give up easily. We're engaged in what it is that we do, and we don't give up and just say, well, that's too hard. I'm going to become an accountant now. You know, this is a, you know, it's not a choice, really. So we keep on keeping on. I think that we have been blessed in a lot of ways in that we have relationships with U.S. embassies, and the U.S. embassies have been very supportive and gracious. And I think that the most important thing is that more and more, they're recognizing the power of theater to bring information to their communities, to dispel misinformation, to work against violent extremism, to bring important information about where to seek help for domestic violence. These are practical solutions. And working directly with the community, we help them, they help us come up with practical, actionable solutions to these problems. It took a long while. It was a tough nut to crack to convince these powers that be, the U.S. embassies and others, that theater has anything to do with conflict resolution. And I always say theater is conflict resolution. Every play you've seen, every book you've read, every movie is about a conflict and how it is resolved. So it really is literally theater is conflict resolution. And I think once that we were able to report on the impact of the work that we did, they could see, for example, in Afghanistan, the play when we were doing the women's shows right in women's homes. They went right into women's homes, would do their play maybe three times with a little bit broader, bigger audience each time. The places where we had done these shows, voting by women went up 80%. Well, these are the kind of impact numbers that make a difference. Places like USIP, the United States Institute of Peace, and the embassies, they can see, they can count, they can really see that there's an impact beyond the numbers. Right. I always look at what the effect is on the people. And this is a little bit more difficult to measure, but we have our ways to measure the impact before and after.
Well, I think that this is an enormous takeaway. Let me explain what I'm taking from this. Because we do so much work in the field of aging, and I do so much work in the field of communications, of advocacy mission issues. And that is creativity. Mm-hmm. To be blunt, if you do a proposal or look for a grant in the arts, it's very different than making a proposal and looking for a grant in conflict resolution through the arts.
Yes. Yes,
and therefore, I'm asking all of our listeners to think about that. What are they really doing? What will be the impact of what they're doing? Not just on the surface, this is a presentation, I'm going to have a conference. No, what will be the result of that conference? Recently, there was a conference in Uganda, and they needed money for that. It was a travel conference. It wasn't about the conference. It was about what would have been the economic development impact. So this is what I'm hearing here. And this is something that I think everybody listening can really ruminate on and see if they are missing something in the way they make a presentation of for funding for what they're doing and not forget the longer term impact of it. Now, is this something that was you and Patrick and the other founders understood from the beginning, or did you have to learn that?
I think we understood the value of the arts in reaching audiences and imparting information. I think it's grown a lot since then. We would do a show and the audience response is applause and speaking to us afterwards on a very informal basis. Now we've incorporated much more direct conversation, dialogue with the audiences after there's a performance and teaching others that we work with how to facilitate that conversation in a very positive way to never negate somebody's suggestion, but take it again back to the audience so that every performance is followed by this direct dialogue with the audience. What do they think is maybe an alternate solution to the problem presented on the stage? What would they do in this situation? Sometimes it even involves bringing an audience member up onto the stage to act out what they would do to the, what they would say to the abusive husband or the dismissive policeman or whatever. And that, again, it's been very interesting, and you get very interesting responses.
Sounds like improv. Yes, and. What would you say?
Yes,
it is. Yeah. So we do the show, and then we leave it to the audience to take it from there. Yeah, exactly.
I want to go back to Michael. He said a dirty word, and that word was COVID. You know, what did you do? What did you do during COVID? You said it got suspended. All the arts did. I went to California during COVID. And before I left for California, I rode down Broadway. And it was a ghost town. So what did you do during that period of time?
Well, we actually did all the things we've been wanting to do if we had any spare time. One of them was archives. We've had a huge history from our entire 50-year history now or something in our basement stored away. I kind of went through it. We're also working. Everybody tells us, my goodness, your adventures are so interesting. You should write a book or, you know, have a more intensive sort of lecture demonstration performance. So those are the kind of things we started to look at during that time. I wanted to also add to the question about, in a way, like funding, because this was what made me think of it. Especially now that we're looking at our domestic programming here, I have to go around and look at, well, what's, you know, available. It's been interesting that organizations that we normally applied to in the past, like the New York State Council on the Arts, have pivoted a little bit in how they present their grants. They're giving out, you know, multi-year grants, which sort of makes it easy. If you get the first year, then you know you've got something for subsequent years. But also, I know that when a crisis happens, sometimes you got to look out to see who might, you know, jump in. I remember when the economy was very down. I forget which time that was, 2008 or before. And the schools were very concerned that a lot of the arts budgets were getting cut. And then I believe it was the Annandale Foundation that started pouring money into that. And that actually helped us present programs in the schools, a show, Travels with Tricksters, that Joanna and I do. We do a Peter and the Wolf with a woodwind quintet again about. So that kind of came along. And I try to stay confident that you've got to keep a lookout for what foundations might suddenly spring up and might come to the forefront. And also we are starting to look at, because we're kind of, you know, with such a history, we have a lot of institutional knowledge, and I know there's a lot of groups starting out. And even in terms of, you know, managing, I spend a lot of times doing the kind of management that I could probably give to somebody else. And I thought, what if somebody else has a manager that only has 20% of their time, and we were able to link that manager to four different groups. So each one of us puts in, you know, the 20%, but that takes a huge load off what we might be doing, so we can, you know, put our efforts into more of the domestic programming, like I'm talking about.
Right. So collaboration is important. Mentoring is important. You are mentors.
Partnerships.
Exactly. And you know, we don't have our own space. We have a office studio that we use, and it's, you know, it's not really a public space over on the fourth floor, but I know there are a lot of other groups in the city that are looking for things to happen. Oh, one other thing that's been unusual, when COVID happened, they started having this program of closing the streets.
Yes.
They call them open streets, even though they're kind of closing them to traffic. Right. They're now they're keeping those open streets program going, and the Department of Transportation is looking for stuff to do, the business improvement districts. These are not normally organizations might go to or have in the past looked towards the arts, but now they are because they see that they've got this opportunity to have a space, to have something family friendly going on there. And that can become a revenue for, you know, contracted work, you know, for the example of artists.
It always reminds me of the Chinese word for crisis is the same word for opportunity.
Oh,
so
my goodness,
really? Always, yeah. I think it's wonderful. And this is something to remember. Now, speaking of opportunity, first Joanne and then Michael, because you probably both have something to say about this. And that is technology. You're going into rural areas, and we know that in rural areas in the world, particularly with women, they don't have even access to technology. Everybody else is making their own movies and putting it on their phone. So tell me a little bit about, have you had technology impact? Do you have a desire to stream everything, post everything? Or is this really person to person? What's been the MO with regard to technology for Bond Street Theater?
Well, that's a really good question. We prefer person to person, live. Absolutely, I feel that that has the most impact, absolutely, without a doubt. However, we film everything that we do, and we've had some programs that are only digital theater. And I don't like that as much, but we always sort of partner that with some live performance, some live interactions, live workshops. In Palestine, we did this project about this time last year. We were in Palestine doing a project that was just digital. Youth speaking about what was important to them, making these little short movies, these little short mini plays. And then immediately they got on their phone and edited it and put it online. It's great in that it reaches a huge number of everybody, youth, adults. You know, everybody uses their phone now.
Right.
They put it on whatever programs are the most prevalent in Palestine. Everywhere we go, there's a different program that people are using to communicate with each other. It's great. It's, you know, I remember the days when, if you know, it was amazing to be able to send a fax to
yes.
set up your performances.
Your paperwork would always get rolled up. I remember the original fax.
Yeah, and they fade and they're terrible yeah. and they go away. And so we were all really happy to see that we can have like online communications. It's wonderful. I would not have it any other way, but it is not ever going to be a replacement for live theater. It's the electricity that occurs between the musicians on the stage and the audience, the dancers on the stage and the audience, the theater actors on the stage and the audience. There's nothing, whether your stage is just a piece of a clear area in a marketplace in South Sudan or whether it's an actual stage somewhere. There is nothing to replace that face-to-face interaction.
Yes, I personally feel that way. My daughter says that I do not discriminate, that I will go to the opening of an envelope. That's her. But it's true. I see what Michael sees, and that is there's a huge amount of talent out there.
Mm-hmm.
And you cannot prejudge it. So I want to go back to that and ask Michael a question. First, if there's any technology comments, I'm very happy to hear that, Michael. But I have another question for you as well, which is some of the folks that have participated in this, whether they're the younger folks or community leaders, did they continue on with theater and create some of this for themselves? Would you know that, whether there were some legs, we'll say, to the productions that you were bringing them?
Great. Yeah, that's a good question. Let me ask and put in a couple of thoughts with the technology question, because that's also gets to something about being smart and being and working with young people. There's been several situations. For example, just quickly, we were in Russia and I was playing the part of a teacher in this play. And if people ask, you know, well, what do you do about translation? My dialogue was blah, 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 which is basically how students hear teachers anyway some of the time.
Right.
And then we physicalize stuff. But The show is about a young refugee boy assimilating into this classroom, and a little girl, and she was literally, I guess, like, you know, 7 or 8 years old. They created a scene that they just came up with about holding her phone, having the boy speak in his language, which was Dari, actually. He was an Afghan refugee. And then she talked back into it. And I looked at her and I talked to our translator. I said, what is she doing? What is that? Oh, it's Google Translate. I said, what's Google Translate? The first time I saw a thumb drive was also in Afghanistan. I mean, they always pick up on this technology fast, which as the managing director, and in terms, I think you were sort of asking a little bit about social media, that's becoming really hard for me. I try to stay up on a lot of it, but it moves so fast. And there are so many companies out there that are now trying to, well, we can take over your payroll. We can take over your fundraising. We can take over this or that. Clearly with using like AI programs, and maybe they're really good. I don't know, but I find that mind boggling. I don't know how to navigate that. And I think there's probably a lot of NGO folks out there that can relate to that.
Well, you just inspired me. We have something at GNIC called a hackathon. And I'm going to take a minute to tell everybody about it and come back and conclude with the question about, has anybody else brought this work and continued this work? But we will be back in just a moment. We're going to talk about technology and the hackathon with GNIC. Don't you guys go anywhere. It's an amazing occurrence. It's the Hackathon, a month-long online event where teams develop projects to address the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. The mission is to educate and empower participants to create sustainability with technology. During the event, our partners will share their work and mission in workshops. Attending those workshops can help participants gain a better understanding of the SDGs and how their technical skill sets can contribute. The partners also provide internship, mentorship opportunities for event winners, fast-tracking an opportunity to form long-term friendships with experts and industry veterans, and winners are selected by a panel of 17 judges from GNIC and the United Nations and win substantial prizes. Want to know more about the hackathon? Well, listen to our hackathon podcast at gnec.ngo. Well, now we are back and we're talking about Bond Street Theater. So, Michael, let's talk about maybe lasting impact. In addition to getting your messages out, in addition to engaging the community and entertaining, have you seen offshoots of what you're doing? You mentioned other groups that would like to use arts and advocacy, maybe some folks that were involved in other countries with what you brought to them. What comes to mind with regard to that? And are you seeing more of that or hoping for more of that in the future?
Sure. Well, I think as Joanne explained, a lot of the people we've worked with, especially overseas, are not trained actors and they don't really have a particular interest to go into the acting field. But More and more we get reports coming back from them saying what we did in terms of building their confidence, just even speaking in front of people has brought them along light years in terms of being able to work within their communities and collaborate in communities. So that skill alone, which is sometimes difficult to measure over, you know, how that affects people's lives. Whereas at the same time, when we have worked on shows, the groups, like even the one in Kazakhstan, they did do the show several times after we worked with them. This was about domestic violence and such. And they even had to like replace one of the actors who, of course, went on to some other job or something. And, oh, well, they bring somebody else in, which is not an easy thing. And I was very impressed that they took that in. The group that we worked with in Myanmar are still working today, and we just wrote a proposal to work with them again, even though they're under the duress of a military dictatorship and they've got to keep their profiles clean for what the spies might be looking out for. Nevertheless, they've been working hard, and they've been using our techniques, and we've been learning from them, and it has been going on really well. And even the groups in Afghanistan, they did stay in, of the 25 provinces, many of them kept working as a youth group, and they would apply for their own funding from Afghanistan, again, before the Taliban came in.
Right.
So we have a lot of stories that definitely show that
it has legs.
It has legs, definitely.
Well, I love this. And Joanna, I ask this question of every single person who is a director or a founder, and I don't do it before the show. So it's spontaneous, but I didn't single you out. If you had a magic wand and you could create anything for Bond Street Theater's future, what would it look like?
My dream would be able to just reach more people and to do it on a continuous basis so that, you know, it is really important for us to go back to an area. We don't like to do these drop-in programs. We like to really establish roots and then go back and see how people are doing. We do stay in touch with all of the groups that we've been working with over the years, but it'd be great to be able to really expand what it is that we do into more areas. We were in one area in South Sudan, but we could be in 10 areas in South Sudan. We have ongoing programs in South Africa, and our communications director actually is in South Africa. Great that we can just have this remote relationship. It's no problem. Just having the third leg of our major staff is in South Africa, not a problem. I would like to be able to really establish more of an office there so that we could work on the continent with an office there and maybe other hub offices, one in Southeast Asia, maybe in Thailand, where we have a hub office there, where we can continue to work. We have grants to go back to Palestine and or Jordan and Pakistan. It would be great if we could go back to Afghanistan. It would be great to have a hub office again. We had an office in Afghanistan for years, you know, a house and a full staff, et cetera, to be able to reestablish that kind of hub in that area to branch out from there. So this is something that we've been looking at actually for a long time, this idea of kind of a global arts core, you could say.
A network,
yeah, that would be able to take the work that we do, which is not rocket science, and just be able to expand it through these networks and hubs in different areas so that we could just reach a larger audience. The arts are so entertaining and useful and desirable, engaging. Arts training really helps people communicate, speak out. It's leadership training. It's trust building, team building, et cetera. It's so useful, and we just want to do what we can to manifest that as widely as we can. And, of course, that would be the dream.
Some people who are listening are funders, donors, and so on. How do they find you for that purpose? Or there are other organizations that might want to collaborate. What's the best way for them to reach you?
They can always go to our website, www.bondst.org, or they can write to info@bondst, that's Bond Street, but abbreviate the street.
Which is directly to Joanna.
O-R-G. Yes. Yeah, that's sort of the main office email. Right. Or if they want to reach Michael directly or Joanna directly, they go Joanna or Michael at bondst.org.
Well, that's wonderful. And as everybody knows, we have show notes that are always right next to the audios on all of our disseminators. This is heard on Spotify, Apple, Google, every one of them. So all of those URLs will be written out for anyone who's listening and driving right now. You don't have to get out a pen. So if you want to be a collaborator, if you want to be a donor, if you want to be an intern, if you want to be a volunteer, if you want to be a funder, if you have questions, you'll be able to do that. These are very, very warm, magnanimous people. And I thank both of you so much for being with us today.
Well, thank you. And we all appreciate it.
Just said it's been a pleasure. And Patrick's spirit is definitely with you guys at the UN. As we know, he's with us. And just a shout out to him, wherever he may be in the universe.
Well, I will say every time I look into anything that has to do with GNIC, someone says, oh, that was Patrick's idea.
Yeah, it was such an inspiration. I definitely was a mover shaker.
No doubt. And thank you so much. And to the extent that that he's a part of this and he was a very big part of it, is certainly you're carrying on his legacy. Thank you so much.
Yes, indeed.
Thank you, Adrian.
Take care. This is Adrian Berg saying goodbye for now from on the ground. See you soon.